Well, welcome to this Wednesday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. I'm Eric Dethridge. On a day when it's the first day or at least first week of school for a lot of parents, we've been marinating in the terrible, terrible news out of Minneapolis of another shooting at a school. But I am glad you're listening to Main Street right now. Thank you for joining us. We will try to lighten things up just as much as we can over the next hour. We've got the inspiring story of Nicole Henson, a Fargo entrepreneur who has whipped up very popular pastries and other sweet treats at our French Lake Cafe for many years. Now she's forging ahead with an expansion that'll have area diners and visitors alike quite excited. But we're going to start off with STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. Of course, we want kids to learn it, but maybe you would like to learn a little more yourself. Craig Blumenschein has the story.
And we are pleased to be joined today on Main Street by Hope Berdolsky. She is the STEM education specialist at North Dakota's beautiful Gateway to Science in Bismarck. From mobile STEM zone workshops that travel across the state to unforgettable experiences like rocket launch trips to NASA's Kennedy Space Center, Hope is bringing science to life for learners at every age. And recently, she has secured an AARP Community Challenge grant that expands programming to include digital literacy and hands-on workshops for older folks, even like me, Hope. Welcome to Main Street.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
Okay, let's back up a bit. For listeners who have yet to visit, what is the Gateway to Science and how does it serve North Dakota?
North Dakota's Gateway to Science is a science center based in Bismarck, North Dakota, and we have an amazing building here that has more than 100 exhibits, and everything is meant to inspire the scientist in everyone. And so we have exhibits that highlight different careers, different topics that relate to North Dakota. And on top of that, we also have outreach that goes across the entire state and region. And so a lot of what I do is actually outside of the building, and we provide STEM learning experiences to places that may not have regular access to it.
Let's talk about that. STEM zone. Is that what you're speaking about?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, tell me, what is that? And where do you go? Who can access the STEM zone work that you do?
Our STEM zones are one of our most popular things to do with our outreach. It is an opportunity for us to come into schools, and we bring 10 prepackaged kits, and every single kit highlights a different career field. And so one of my favorites is astronaut workstation, where kids can actually try on gloves and try to do tasks and try to actually become an astronaut. And so every single school in the state of North Dakota, and even organizations, really we go to anyone who is interested in having us, because providing those STEM opportunities is so crucial. But with STEM zones, we are able to come in on either a family night, we can come during the school day, we can come to community events. And so it's a really great and flexible program, because we're able to adapt it to whatever the place that we're going to needs. All that we ask from the place that we're going to is volunteers to help us facilitate the stations. And we provide all of the instructions and knowledge for the people so that they become the expert. And then we also ask for a space to hold it in, as well as tables and chairs. And so we bring everything and we clean up after ourselves as well.
You've coordinated immersive experiences like rocket launch education trips to NASA's Kennedy Space Center. How did that work for what must have been a once in a lifetime experience?
Yes, this was an amazing experience that I was so grateful to be a part of. We were approached by Students to Launch, which is a program that is no longer in existence, sadly, but we were able to be the last trip to go and see a rocket launch, where they approached us and said, we are looking for a rural school that has about 35 students in middle school age group, grades 7 and 8. How can we get to North Dakota? Because North Dakota, we have a lot of aerospace industry that not a lot of people know about, especially with the University of North Dakota and their space studies program. We have the North Dakota Space Grant Consortium, and we also have some really great aerospace industry in the state in general. And so we were approached by Students to Launch to pick a school in our region that we would be able to come in, provide STEM learning, where we created an opportunity called Astronaut Socks or Astro Socks. And they had to problem solve a real issue that happens in space, where they, in space, they're using different parts of their feet. Instead of using the bottoms of their feet, they're usually using the tops to make sure that they're not floating around. And so they had to problem solve and come up with a sock that our astronauts could wear to prevent what they call crocodile feet, which is the really rough skin on the top of your feet that they develop. After that, we were able to wait for a little bit of time because rocket launches don't always happen on time. And so we were actually able to go June of 2024 and bring our 30 to 35 students from Flasher, North Dakota. And we were able to watch a rocket launch at Kennedy Space Center. And we got to tour all of the facilities, see the crawler that they have, which is remarkable in itself. And then we also got to see the VAB, the vehicle assembly building. And so these kids got to see some once in a lifetime things. And I will say, I don't think they fully comprehended how remarkable that experience was, but it was something that they will be able to say they got to see the GOES-U rocket launch. And so now that's our satellite that gives us all of our weather information. And so it's a once in a lifetime opportunity for those students. And I know that they will carry that experience with them.
And maybe be motivated to study science.
Yes, exactly.
More in high school and in college later. Sounds fantastic. All right. Older folks like me, the AARP Community Yes. Challenge Grant. Tell me about that and how it supports programming for folks like me.
This is one of our brand new grants. We were just able to debut it within the last couple of months, and we have a lot that is planned with this specific program. And so we have a couple of community days specifically for our 50 plus people. We have two community days that we'll be celebrating, one on September 7th, and that's going to be from 1 to 5 p.m. And it is going to be a chance for anybody who is 50 plus to come in. We're calling it Grandparents Day, so it can be a family event, and anyone can come in and celebrate and learn together. And it's going to be, I believe, $3 for admission for those 50 plus. And then there's also an incentive to come and purchase a membership. It'll be 10% off all of our grandparent memberships on that day. On September 16th, I believe it's a Tuesday, we are going to have a 50 plus only day. And so anybody who is 50 plus is going to be able to come in to our gallery space for $3, and they are going to be able to experience the gallery without kids, which is something that we've been trying to provide through our Gateway After Dark series, which is our adult programming. And so we're really excited to be able to provide this really niche experience for people who are 50 plus, because we'll also have some opportunities for learning about digital literacy as people are here. And we'll also have that 10% off grandparent membership on that day as well. Something really cool about our AARP program is we're also providing free learning experiences both on-site and off-site. Our on-site experiences are going to be kind of like a Gateway After Dark 50 plus experience, but we are going to be creating workshops that allow us to teach people about smartphone basics, online safety, and an introduction to artificial intelligence, because it's so necessary to learn about in our communities.
When I think many people my age think about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, they immediately might think, well, that was when I was in high school. I don't need to be worried about that stuff anymore. But from your experience, it's not just for kids.
Correct.
What should we be thinking about when we have opportunities like this?
I think the most important thing for people to look at it as, it's a chance to develop your critical thinking, the chance to develop that inquiry, because even though you're an adult, that doesn't mean that that critical thinking and that inquiry and that passion for learning stops. And so I love being able to provide opportunities here at Gateway to Science with my team to make sure that everybody across North Dakota and in our region are able to experience the chance to have that critical thinking and inquiry, because like I said, it doesn't stop when you stop school. It continues throughout your entire life.
Enjoying my conversation with Hope Brodolsky. She is the STEM education specialist at North Dakota's Gateway to Science, and that's in Bismarck. If you haven't seen the place, it is spectacular. Take me to the future, Hope, about what you get to do. What excites you most about how you're expanding outreach in the state?
That is one of my favorite things to talk about, because with outreach, a lot of what we do is really changing the lives of students across our state. And so with our outreach, my biggest goal right now is for the next calendar year or for the next fiscal year, my biggest goal is actually to reach every county in the state of North Dakota in some way or another. But that's just one small goal. My biggest goal for Gateway to Science as a whole through the rest of our future is we are making a lasting impact on our communities across the entire state, because oftentimes when we're in rural communities, you don't have as many opportunities to engage with STEM. And so my goal is to leave a lasting impression on as many people as possible so that we have that workforce development. We have the chance to be able to be the force that North Dakota can be.
What's your background, Hope? How did you get connected to Gateway to Science?
I actually have been going to Gateway to Science since I was little. I moved here when I was six, and my mom always knew that I loved learning about science. And so I started going to Gateway to Science when I was very little. I had my seventh birthday party here, actually, in the old building. And so I grew up knowing I absolutely loved it, and it was my dream job to be able to work here at Gateway to Science. I went to the University of North Dakota and pursued my bachelor's of science in education. I also have minors in biology, middle-level education, and music. So my dream going through college was to be a middle-level education teacher. I love sixth grade. And so I did my student teaching here in Bismarck and absolutely loved it. But during my time as an undergrad, I actually worked as a STEM ambassador for the North Dakota Space Grant Consortium, which is a NASA partner here in North Dakota. And as North Dakota's Gateway to Science, we are also affiliates of the Space Grant Consortium. And so I was able to work as a STEM ambassador for the Space Grant Consortium and lead summer camps for North Dakota's Gateway to Science. And so I was able to get real hands-on classroom learning experience, lead my own classroom, plan it, actually facilitate all the lessons. And so I was able to do some really amazing prep work. And through my experience as an undergrad here, I taught two summers before I graduated, and I fell in love with informal education. And so I couldn't see myself necessarily in a classroom because I could see the amazing impact that North Dakota's Gateway to Science has. And we were able to really hop right in as soon as I was able to graduate. I was able to try some subbing, but I knew that as soon as the job position opened as a STEM educator, that was meant for me. And ever since then, I have been able to work my way up into our STEM education specialist position.
What challenges do you have, Hope, in maybe wanting to expand, wanting to reach more folks?
Something that is always going to be prevalent is funding, because oftentimes reaching across the state, we do have some amazing corporate sponsors. We have some amazing support from grants, but funding is always going to be something that can affect the reach that we have across the state. And so we're always looking for sponsors, grant funders. And so that's one of the best parts is we get to travel across the state with a lot of grant funding. One example is through the North Dakota Health and Human Services. We were able to reach 800 students or 800 plus students this past spring to teach students about misconceptions in science. And so that was fully grant funded. And we were able to travel across the entire state to be able to reach those students. But without that grant support, that's not something that we would necessarily be able to do. And so we're always looking for support for not just the schools that we reach, but for opportunities to reach across the state.
Now that summer's winding down, do your hours change at the Gateway to Science?
We actually do not change our hours based on the season that we are in. It does depend specifically for our Outdoor Explorium, which is a new space that we have that we just opened at the beginning of August. And those hours may change a little bit depending on the weather. Our Explorium is open from 1:30 to 5 p.m. every single day, weather permitting. And then we are open Mondays from 10 to 5. We're closed Tuesdays to be able to have a rest and recoup day to make sure that our exhibits are in the best working condition for our patrons. On Wednesdays, we're open from 9 to 5. Thursdays, we're open 10 to 7 p.m. in case you are able to, or if you're not able to come during the regular work day. And then Friday, Saturday, we are open from 10 to 5. And Sunday, we're open from 1 to 5.
Hope, you have a lot of programming coming up. How can we stay informed?
Like I said, we do have a lot of programming coming up, and so we are able to stay up to date. If you look at our website, it has anything and everything that you might need calendar-wise as well as registration. We have also a Facebook page that has all sorts of information, and then we are also on Instagram with our STEM at Home series, and so you're able to do some learning at home, but highly recommend following all of our socials because that's how you can stay up to date on all the amazing programming we have.
That's Hope Berdolsky. She's the STEM education specialist at North Dakota's beautiful Gateway to Science in Bismarck. Hope, it's been a pleasure and best wishes.
Thank you very much. I've had so much fun talking to you.
Thanks for joining us on Main Street.
Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Craig and Hope. And I have hope that maybe it's not too late for me to learn a thing or two about STEM stuff. You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Eric Dethridge. Well, speaking of later in life adventures, the winner of the tell-off last month at the 4x4 above Side Street Grill and Pub in Fargo decided to follow a passion. Let's hear where it led her.
Hi, everybody. I don't know about you, but I've wanted to do a lot of things in my life that, as the years go by, they become less and less likely. And you know that if you really want to do something, you have to like prepare for it and do all these steps to make it happen. But an example is, I woke up in my 30s and I realized I couldn't play Little Orphan Annie. Like, I'd have to be Miss Hannigan, you know? Or I couldn't be in the Olympics because I didn't do any sport. Like, and I always wanted to do those things. Well, this is about something kind of like that. I'll go back to 2020. And it was the spring of 2020, the depths of COVID isolation. And I was teaching Spanish to high school students online in my house to basically a blank screen, you know. And for a little escapism, I would plan these getaways and these vacations I wasn't gonna take. But I started to like Google surf camp, okay? I'd always wanted to surf, and I would Google surf camp, and I even like changed all my passwords to like @surfcamp2020! You know, like thinking it's gonna like put it out there in the universe and make it more likely. Like, I changed my passwords though, okay? Okay. And so I didn't really do anything about it. A year later, 2021, my daughter graduates from high school, and I had always planned and I was saving my money to take her on a trip to New York City. But it's 2021 and New York City's not happening. No Broadway shows, no museums. So I gave up on that idea, and my sister was like, save your money. I'm gonna get you and your daughter to California. You're gonna watch our dogs for 2 weeks, and then with our miles, we'll fly you to Hawaii. I borrowed a boogie board and I went out to tackle the waves. And I find myself like surrounded by people with way tanner arms than me and way more muscular. But I'm like, you know, I should probably go in, but just one more. So I catch the next wave and then I go down and I'm pummeled and I mean, it was terrifying. And I get up from the water, I see my daughter in the safe distance, I smile really big and I like wave, because I was like, I wanted her to remember me forever, really happy. I'm like, I'm going to die. And then I went down again and I survived. I like threw myself on the sand and I was covered with cuts from the coral and I was pretty humbled. Okay, so fast forward, now I'm 49, or then, you know, and I was restless and an empty nester, and I started Googling surf camp. Okay, so, but this time I was gonna do it right. I was like gonna have proper instruction. I promised my daughter, I'm like, no more winging it for me, I'm doing it the right way. And so I left my job, sold my house, put my stuff in a 10x10 storage unit, really, moved in with my mom, and I found this place called Spanish Surf and Stay. So 4 hours of Spanish in the morning, 2 hours of surf in the afternoon, and then stay. I'm like, you can kind of put any three things together and make it a thing. And so I go, and it's, you know, I was really excited. I prepared all summer. I swam a lot and walked and exercised and listened to Spanish podcasts about complex subjects. And I watched like surfing videos of like professional surfers. It didn't help. So I get there and I'm going to my class and I have a teacher named Diego and there's two other women who will be with me. One of them, her name was Karen. She was 27, from Australia, a firefighter, okay? The next one, her name was Bora. She was 25, from South Korea, a police officer. They were like just doing this to like enhance their game, right? I was brand new. So I pick up my surfboard, I have it, it's like really heavy, and we start walking to the beach, and Karen and Bora disappear ahead of me, and we get to where you go to the beach, and there's a stairway with 170 steps. And I'm like trying to dodge and not hit people in the head with my surfboard. And I was like pretty much wiped out by stair five. So Diego, he was nice and he took my surfboard all the way down and he's like, okay, she can't be spent before we even start. Well, we review the things on the sand and then we get in the water and it's like, hard. It's really hard. It's a lot of paddling. Like, they don't tell you that. They tell you it's like catching the waves. It's paddling. So you like paddle, 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 wipe out. Okay? Day two, paddle, 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 wipe out. Again and again. Day three, we go in this van with like Bora and Karen and Diego and all the other surf students. And I sit next to this condescending Greek dude in a Speedo. Mm-hmm. And it's a more challenging beach. And they're like, you're ready. I was not. So we go there, and it was terrible. Like, the waves were bigger and stronger. But I should have known because it's Oaxaca, and it's known for challenging and powerful surf. I picked the wrong thing. Like, I was delusional. And then I really decided that day. I was getting pummeled. I was going under. I was just, like, full of water and sand, and I was really suffering. And I went, I can quit. Like, I don't have to do this. I was going to do it 16 days. I'm like, I'm done. Yeah, 16 days. And I'm like, I can just Photoshop myself and send it to my kids and not do it. You know, like, I'm done. And then this part is real. Just a few feet from me, there's a sea turtle. And I was like, oh, it's beautiful. And then I turn around, and there's a rainbow. And a dolphin jumps. And I'm like, come on, just do one more, okay? So I do it. I don't wipe out. I catch that wave. I like get to the shore. I go all the way to the shore. I hurl myself onto the sand, but I didn't quit. I kept going. I did all the days. I celebrated my 50th birthday on day 13. And Diego, my instructor, stuck with me the whole way. He brought me cupcakes, and I'm super good at cupcakes. And, you know, the rest of the trip had a lot of adventures, but I did a hard thing for no real reason. But I'm glad I did, and, you know, I hope to be back to the tell. Thanks. I'm gonna hit that.
That was Lana Sumala's surf story here on Main Street. She was the winner at the Tell's season finale Tell Off in Fargo last month. The live storytelling series returns to the 4 and 4 Above Side Street on September the 11th. In the second half of the show, Rick Guillen speaks with the entrepreneurial force behind Fargo's much-loved Nicole's Fine Pastry. But first, let's get you caught up on the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. A Cass County deputy has been fired following an investigation into an alleged assault of an inmate last month. Correctional Deputy Andrew Robinson was initially placed on administrative leave following the incident. A criminal investigation by the North Dakota Bureau of Criminal Investigation, as well as an internal investigation by the Cass County Sheriff's Office, has been completed. In a media statement, Sheriff Jesse Johnner said Robinson's actions did not align with the office's expectations. He also thanked BCI for their investigation into the incident. No charges related to the incident were confirmed. And the new chairman of the State Board of Higher Education says he hopes to work with legislators on the funding formula for the state's colleges and universities. Kevin Black appeared before the Higher Education Funding Review Committee. He says he wants the board to be collaborative.
I've heard some of my predecessors in this seat refer to higher education as the fourth branch of government. I want to be very clear. I don't agree with that, and I don't see it that way. We are not a fourth branch of government. What I want all of you to know is that we want to be here as partners.
Black and the committee chairman, Fargo Senator Ron Sorvog, said what's good for higher education is first and foremost. But Grand Forks Senator Jonathan Sickler says he looked at the board's self-assessment from May, and he says some of the board members talked about parochialism. And Sickler says Northeast North Dakota doesn't have a board member right now.
So whether those comments are perceived or actual, it makes this whole process, whether it's specific to the funding issues or some of the other topics that we're all trying to talk about in higher ed, it just makes that more difficult.
Sickler asked Black to help damp down the parochialism on the board. Black says he realizes there has been a long history of that on the board.
I think the way we fix that is, you know, transparency, sunlight is the best disinfectant. I think holding ourselves accountable as board members is that we're not going to be afraid to engage in the hard discussions in open meeting. Therefore, everybody's intentions and I think positions are going to be out there for all of you to see.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
It's my pleasure to be with you today on this Wednesday, the 27th of August, 2025. I'm Eric Dethridge in for Craig, and you are listening to Main Street on member-supported Prairie Public. Well, on the way, Fargo lands on a national list of best college football towns. And on our news podcast, Prairie Beat, Danielle Webster and I follow up on some stories that made headlines earlier this summer, like North Dakota's dubious distinction of having the most measles cases per capita. But first, I hope you came hungry.
I like bagels.
Have some salad.
All I eat is pizza.
Eat some barbecue.
Applesauce and some nice red beets.
Well, welcome to Prairie Plates, your weekly edition serving up good stuff and good food here on Main Street on Prairie Public. And this week, we have a very special guest, Nicole Henson with Nicole's Fine Pastry and Cafe in downtown Fargo, which I frequent. James Beard's semifinalist nominee 2024, I believe, Nicole?
I believe that's correct.
Yes, and we're going to talk a little bit today about an expansion, renovation, some new menu items, just a lot of exciting things happening at Nicole's Fine Pastry and Cafe. Nicole, welcome to Prairie Plates.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start out talking about Nicole's a little bit. What's been the evolution there?
When I set out to open a business, I opened a pastry shop January of 2003. I just wanted to serve dessert, have some good espresso drinks, coffee. I soon realized that we all needed a good lunch, balance out some of the sugar intake. And so once we started making croissants, we added some sandwiches. The business grew. In 2010, I expanded into the South Building. 2015, I was privileged enough to be able to purchase the two buildings. I started thinking about an expansion in 2018, and I got derailed. Then we all know what happened in 2020.
Yes.
and thanks to this community's support and many of my staff's hard efforts in helping me, it was rather easy to keep the business going. I still have a note in my billfold from one guy. It really inspired me. And so then I started working on a renovation. There's a dear friend of mine helped me realize that there was more that could be done there. Okay, well then it's how do we rearrange the floor plan to accommodate? I mean, because I've said, you know, the Savory Kitchen, we were kind of camping. We had very limited equipment, and so we were held back by the lack of proper cooking equipment on that side. You just can only go so far with what you've got. And it took quite a while to figure out the actual floor plan, and I knew we'd have to tear down a wall in the back of the building because I think most of you that have come into that business on the front end had no idea what we were all dealing with behind the scenes. And so for those of you that have been coming in all these years, you've probably not noticed a big change because I didn't do a lot to jazz up the front because I spent most of the money in the back and on the roof. One thing I can say is, you know, I've added a liquor license, so now you can have Bloody Marys, mimosas, and there is going to be a booth inside the front door that'll hopefully show up before the weather gets cold, and that'll add some more seating. But through that renovation process, it's like my goal was to keep it running, cash flowing the whole time. Hang on to my staff, keep us all employed. That's probably the hardest thing I've ever done in 22 years of business.
And you have a good staff and you keep staff.
I sure try.
Yes. Yes. What does the renovation and the new kitchen mean for menus? It looks like you've expanded menus. You can make new items.
Correct. For a long time, we were doing soup, salads, paninis, you know, so we were limited. And now we've got a flat top griddle. I bought a fancy oven. So hash browns, French fries, burgers, omelet, we can do that. And I think when you speak of brunch, many of those items tie together.
And these omelets are a French style omelet. I've been really into the eggs Florentine lately. I think I've tried them about, 10 times maybe. But the French omelet is also quite good. Is there anything else on the menu you're really excited about?
You know, I've tried to eat healthy myself, despite being around a lot of sugar.
Yes.
And caffeine. I mean, we cannot sustain life on those two items.
Although we'd like to sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I think the avocado toast, with the options that you can add on, there's a house granola that we're making. And, you know, the retail side will be able to sell some of that house granola over there. I think as far as lunch items or evening, the shrimp and soba noodle salad, one of my favorites. Gluten-free option, well, soba noodles are gluten-free. And the salmon smørrebrød, I think very pretty, fun to eat. You know, fruit tarts, we like to look at them, we like to eat them. We think we're eating healthy, but we eat with our eyes.
We do, yes. Yeah, and those fruit tarts in that pastry case just look delicious. I can't help myself. I need to order one.
Yeah.
Talk about maybe the new bar and the options there. We talked earlier about mimosas, Bloody Marys for brunch, but mm-hmm. there are other things too.
Oh, yeah. I added a liquor license. So if you want a gin and tonic or a martini or any other kind of cocktail, we've stocked it up so you can come in and sit down and enjoy that or whatever, you know, you have in mind. I've hope the staff will let you have a cup of coffee and an Eggs Benedict.
And this is not taking away from the pastries and sweet treats. You'll still offer a whole bunch of those.
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, once we finally got the doors back open, the middle of August, the pastry case was put back the way it was, that north side functioning the way it always has.
Well, I do want to give a shout out to your head chef, Chris Smart, too. He's just one of the nicest guys in the food business, and he's really revolutionizing what you're doing in the kitchen.
Yes, yes, he is. I'm honored that he's there. He's had good background in town, and he tries. And I think some people in the food industry, it's in their DNA. Others fall into the restaurant world because they need a job. That's not him.
Mm-hmm. And I like his French onion soup when it's on the menu. I'm a big French onion soup fan, and it really, like, it's a traditional French presentation, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's really neat.
I think that's important. I think the whole goal of that business, at least for me as the owner, is to help you feel like you've fell into a foreign country. I mean, many of us have traveled, and yearn for that a little more. We want to disappear off of the prairie and pretend we're somewhere else. And I think if you put your mind in the right spot, you can sit in there and pretend you're in Paris or Italy, which just makes it kind of fun.
And you also will still offer coffees and specialty drinks. That's a part of it as well. So that won't go away.
No.
No. Because I always like going in for coffee. It's just really good coffee, and the cappuccinos are good. But you've also added a market on one of the sides, too. Talk about that a little bit.
Yes. Well, I've been on the block, well, frankly, since before 2003 when I opened, and I've seen changes on that little street over the years. And the market space was vacant, I think, most of last year. And in my mind, I'm thinking, come on, we got to drive business on this block. How do we do that? Because it's going to help me, and it should help the other businesses around. if we can bring more people there. And so I think also being able to offer some things for people to take home, like a pound of butter that we use, or a little container of fancy French butter and eggs, because over the years we've been asked, because people don't want to run all the way to the grocery store or Costco or Sam's Club or, you know, wherever. And to make it convenient, because there's getting to be more people living right in that area. And some of them don't have vehicles.
And there's artisan pastas and olive oils and certain things mm-hmm. like that. Jams, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Certain
yep.
things like that.
I mean, we're just getting started on that market side. You know, it helped us survive the renovation. But then as we keep going, you know, into the fall and the holidays, we're going to add more items. And I've still got local people in town that I haven't even contacted that I'm hoping to get their products in there as well. There's a healthy, natural, however you want to word it, angle that I want to take.
Yes, that's what I've noticed too. A lot of those products are higher end, artisan, handmade, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, another thing I've noticed about Nicole's Fine Pastry and Cafe is it's really a place of community and gathering. And I know you really want to say a big thank you to the community.
No, I do. I mean, after 22 years of business, I think as a small business, and I'm also going to say as a female who started a business, I feel very privileged. And that support that I've received over the years keeps me going. There's some days I go home and I'm like, why should I do this? But I think it's because of everybody continuing to show up and support what we do. And I think the team that's working with me and for me over the years, they've all shown it. And that's huge. The other thing that I feel very important to say, that through this renovation process, the amount of people that showed up, even on text message, to help do different things for me, because it was a lot to get done. And all the guys on that construction site blew me away. I could not believe how well they worked together and tried to better that old building. I mean, I was asked in the beginning if I was sure I didn't want to move somewhere and build a new building because it might have cost me less. And I'm like, nope, I'm staying. I like downtown Fargo, and I want to continue right here. So they had some challenging things to solve, and they did. And for that, I'm more than grateful. I think as time goes on, it'll be fabulous.
Well, with that, Nicole Henson, thank you for joining Prairie Plates this week. It's been a pleasure.
I most appreciate you having me on air.
Well, that was an enjoyable conversation with Rick Guion and Nicole Henson of Nicole's Fine Pastry. Of course, we always have to give a shout out to Nicole for being the provider of our cocoa truffles during our short and sweet drives. We appreciate the partnership and support. Well, I don't have to tell you, Fargo is a happening city. And just this morning, it got some recognition from a major publication. Stay with us. Support for Prairie Public is provided by Basin Electric Power Cooperative, headquartered in Bismarck, serving over 3 million consumers in 9 states, with electricity from coal, natural gas, wind, solar, and hydro. Hey there, Fargo. You've made yet another national list. This time it's not most livable city or best place to raise your kids or retire or anything like that. It's the Washington Post list of the 10 best college football towns in America. So right up there with Madison, Athens, Ann Arbor, Columbus, South Bend, Eugene, Austin, and Boulder is the largest city in North Dakota. The Post singled out the NDSU Bison's dramatic entry into the Fargo Dome, likening the ear-splitting acoustics to that of a jet engine, and comparing the crowd's roar to the University of Texas, Georgia, and Michigan. The author, Kent Babb of The Post, also recommended the Bison Turf for pregame eats and drinks, Worst Beer Hall for their exotic meats and poutine, Mezzaluna for sophisticated Midwest bites, and Marge's Diner for delicious hangover grub and a Fargo movie motif. Well, speaking of Marge Gunderson, Babb also gave a shout-out to the FM Visitor Center for their wood chipper display, complete with a bloody ankle sticking out. Oh yeah, it doesn't hurt too that the Bison have won 10 national championships. So, congratulations, Fargo, for making the big time in college football. Now, if the Washington Post could just come up with a list of the 10 best college hockey towns, we know who would top the list. Grand Forks, I'm looking at you. I'm Eric Dethridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. Thanks again for joining us this week for Prairie Beat.
Each week we've been taking a few minutes to look a little closer at the trending headlines, and we've covered a wide range of topics since we started the show earlier this year. So Danielle, what are we discussing this week?
Oh, take me back to the start.
Well, for this episode, I thought we could do something I do from time to time. I look back at some of the things I've been working on and doing stories about, and I ask myself, is there anything that could be updated? And, you know, there were a couple of things I thought were worth revisiting.
Ah, the good old follow-up. That sounds pretty all right to me. Considering some of the things we've talked about this summer, there is some stuff I've been wondering about, too. So what's up first?
Well, let's go back to the beginning.
These were the first cases that we've had reported since our last case, which was in 2011.
So you may recognize Molly Howell, Immunization Program Director with North Dakota's Department of Health and Human Services there. And in that quote, she's referencing, of course, North Dakota's first cases of measles in 14 years.
Yes, that's right. This takes us all the way back to our very first episode. It was reported that North Dakota actually had the highest rate, that's cases per 100,000 people, of measles in the whole country, a stat we can all be proud of. I remember some schools in Williams County having to quarantine, no laughing matter there, nearly a couple hundred students. So what has happened since then?
Well, honestly, not a lot. I keep a tab with the dashboard open on my computer, and I just refresh it a few times a week to just kind of keep my eye on it. Mm-hmm. Between April 29th and May 28th, so about a month's time there, the state confirmed 34 cases of measles, and that is a lot for our population, like you were just talking about. There were a couple of other cases confirmed this summer. One was actually a case that had been confirmed earlier and then officially reported later, and then the other case was confirmed on July 2nd. But other than that, nothing going on.
Well, that's pretty good news. I guess with school being out for the summer, that would keep large groups of kids away from each other, you would think. But it's not like no one would ever be exposed as people are out and about for summer activities.
That's right. And if you can recall, measles is one of the most contagious viruses out there. And as we said before, it can be pretty serious. 9 out of 10 people who haven't been vaccinated will catch it if they are exposed. But speaking of vaccines, there has been renewed interest in those shots. I recently spoke with Cheryl Wavrin at Fargo Cass Public Health, and she told me that more parents were turning up wanting those shots for their kids when measles cases were being found. Health officials aim for about a 95% vaccination rate. And she says for the younger age groups, it's been hovering around 90% locally, so not exactly where they want it. But she also says that once kids get older and into around the middle school age, the vaccination rates for measles generally come back up around 95% in Cass County. So parents do eventually come around on that.
It can be exceedingly disruptive, measles, obviously, for kids in kindergarten, but also in our daycares, because if we had a measles case, because our infants under 12 months of age, they don't have the option for a vaccine, and so they get exposed to measles. Well, now they're excluded.
Well, I wonder what will happen now, Danielle. I mean, that's Cass County, and that's good. It's the largest urban area in North Dakota, but there are rural areas where there's more skepticism for vaccines. I wonder how that's going to work as far as vaccination rates with school getting back into session.
Yeah, you and me both. You know, my son just started kindergarten, so we'll definitely have to wait and see what happens.
Indeed. Welcome to that world, Danielle. There's bound to be another story that we have talked about this year that does need some updating, right?
Oh, yeah. So this is a topic we've touched on a couple of times. We discussed this spring wildfire season earlier this year. It was actually twice as active as it usually is in North Dakota. Later this summer, I dug in again on North Dakota's drought conditions because that obviously drives fire weather, too. Forecasters were pointing to a dry, warm summer that could cause more fire issues later in the fall.
I remember that very, very well. And after the fire in Ray the year before, it got pretty stressful there in the spring. So the prospect of an active fire season for fall didn't exactly sound like good times to me. And the fires were so prolific because it was just dry everywhere.
That's correct. In western North Dakota, it was really bad. They had a lot of areas experiencing moderate to severe drought. I checked throughout the summer on that too, and even northern portions of eastern North Dakota were in moderate drought as well. The U.S. Drought Monitor changes weekly due to updated measurements of the soil and climate. Last week, I was pretty surprised to refresh that map and see that the drought had pretty much disappeared from North Dakota.
Just doesn't stop raining. Kind of sums it up.
Oh, that's such good news. You know, it really has been raining. And I think that's just been sort of the story of the summer of 2025. Rain pretty much everywhere. I know it's just because it's happening outside my window. And I know just because it's happening outside my window, it doesn't mean it's happening everywhere else necessarily, but I guess this time that could be the case.
That's right. So we just heard there from Daryl Richeson. He's North Dakota State climatologist. We had him on before. And when I was talking to him, it was interesting because I felt like I kept hearing that this fall was going to be hot and dry. Like, that's just kind of what the forecasts were kind of looking at. But obviously, things can change. And like he said, it rained quite a bit. Only the very northeastern corner of North Dakota, portions of Cavalier and Pembina counties are considered to be abnormally dry. But as far as drought, everywhere else is perfectly fine. Richeson told me that's virtually resetting our conditions for the time being.
Traditionally, we have two fire seasons in North Dakota, one in the spring and one in the fall. Fall, just because vegetation is dying off, going dormant for the winter and the spring. You know, it's still dormant, coming alive. So it's always those two seasons we always have to watch. But I think that would still be a ways away. There might always be the stray fire, but they have well above average precipitation.
He also told me the next week or two will not be as wet, so that should give farmers opportunities to get out there and get their crops off. So that's good news, too.
Yeah, rain is good up to a point, right? But then you got to harvest and it kind of gets in the way. Well, it's nice to not have to worry about fires for a minute. Last fall was pretty scary for a lot of people in North Dakota, some of whom are still recovering.
That's correct. But there is another thing to keep in mind. That extra vegetation that he mentioned is something to keep our eyes on, too. The really bad fires earlier this year in California were actually due to excess vegetation. It had rained a lot before, and a lot of plants thrive on that moisture. When it got hot and dry again and all that vegetation died off, that meant there was a lot of extra stuff around to burn. So if we get another mild winter, a drier spring, that could create conditions for a more active fire season next spring. But it's all a waiting game at this point. The last couple of winters have been pretty underwhelming as far as snowfall is concerned, but Richeson told me he thinks that's probably not going to happen three times in a row.
Do you really think we're going to get three winters in a row with a way below average snowfall? You know, just statistically, precipitation-wise, you would think we'd at least have a normal winter. And truth be, a normal winter would feel really bad because we've had, you know, two winters in a row without much snowfall.
Well, and as we discussed this, Danielle, I remember another episode we did about Canadian wildfires and the smoke traveling down to North Dakota and affecting our air quality. I mean, we've been dealing with that pretty much all summer. Dry vegetation, the vast Canadian forest, was the driving force behind this fire, so that definitely tracks. Can't believe I'm saying this, but maybe I'll keep my fingers crossed for one of those typical North Dakota winters this year.
Well, whatever happens, we'll be paying attention.
So what else has been in the news this week, Danielle? What other stories have you, Todd, and Dave been chasing down?
We have to have the big stick. We have to have that backstop for our conventional forces so nobody ever challenges us.
Well, we had a story about the Sentinel project that aims to upgrade the United States' nuclear triad. So that will actually include replacing the Minuteman missiles around Minot.
Numerous people say how much the program has saved them, saved their lives, and saved their marriages.
We also had a story this week about the legislature studying the state's 24/7 program, which is a sobriety program designed to keep people out of jail. A legislative committee is looking at how it charges fees.
It's citizens of other communities that have been, quite frankly, pretty nasty.
The company behind the project is Applied Digital. The company also owns and operates data centers in Jamestown and Ellendale.
And lastly, Todd McDonald attended a town hall style meeting this week about a new data center proposed near Harwood, North Dakota. That's just north of Fargo. He said over 100 people were there asking questions. It was the first public meeting regarding that project.
So thanks for updating all that, Danielle. It's always good to get some follow-up and updates on developing stories that you guys are following here in the Prairie Public Newsroom.
You bet. You can be sure to tune in to Prairie Public for more news or check us out online at news.prairiepublic.org.
All right, that's it for this week's Prairie Beat. I'm Eric Dethridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. We'll see you on the beat next week.
This is Dakota Daybook for August 27th. When the North Dakota Agriculture College was established in 1890, many North Dakota farmers were skeptical that college boys could help them improve their farms. But it didn't take long for those college boys to win them over. Also founded in 1890, the Agricultural Experiment Station began conducting research on a wide range of topics, from improved seed strains to livestock breeding, and from plant diseases to animal health. Substations were established across the state, with the main one located at the Agricultural College. On this date in 1909, Professor H. L. Boley, who also served as the state seed commissioner, announced that the Agriculture College had established a new facility to aid farmers. The seed laboratory wasn't quite ready, with some equipment still needed to be installed. But Boley sent a letter to farmers encouraging them to take advantage of the lab when it officially opened in October. In his letter, Boley reminded farmers that North Dakota law regulated the sale of seeds. It was illegal to sell seeds containing more than a reasonable trace of noxious weeds, such as quackgrass or sow thistle. All seeds had to be properly labeled with the correct plant name and the name of the person selling the seed. If the seed was not clean, it had to be labeled unclean. With the new lab, farmers could send in seed samples for analysis. A report would be sent back to the farmer. While the lab couldn't guarantee the quality of the full batch, it could give farmers a sense of how accurate or honest the labeling was. The seed laboratory proved so valuable that North Dakota continues to operate a seed testing facility to this day. The lab notes that in the seed industry, quality determinations are based on standardized testing procedures. It tests for both seed health and seed genetics. North Dakota Agriculture College has since evolved into North Dakota State University, but its commitment to agriculture continues. The motto of the experiment station is, "For the land and its people." Its goal is to find solutions and discover opportunities that enhance the quality of life, sustained food, feed, fiber, and fuel production, and protect our heritage. As unlikely as it may have seemed in the beginning, those college kids are still helping the farmers. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Meryl Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Well, that's it for Main Street on this Wednesday. I'm Eric Dethridge in for Craig this week. It's been a pleasure hanging out with you. I will chat with you tomorrow.